Season 5 of Step by Step is brought to you by Route. Route provides solutions that give retailers control over the entire delivery experience, from package tracking and order protection to customer service and engagement tools that allows you to connect and convert your customers. Does it sound too good to be true? Well, it gets even better because Route is giving away $100 gift cards to merchants listening to this podcast. Stick around to the middle of our episode to find out how you can participate in this offer.
Hello, and welcome to Step by Step, a podcast by Future Commerce and presented by Route. I'm Brian.
And I'm Philip, and this is Season 5 of Step by Step. You are listening to Episode 2 of 5. So if you are just jumping into this series midway through, I suggest that you go back and listen from the very beginning. You don't want to miss a single thing. What are we covering this season on Step by Step, Brian?
Well, the world is changing, Philip.
That's right.
Changes. That's what we're seeing right now. I'm actually not that old. I don't know why I referenced
that. Where did that come from?
I don't know. But the world is changing in a really big way. And Amazon is driving most of that change.
That's true.
At least in our world of commerce, Amazon is setting the bar for brands to have to meet new customer expectations. And Amazon is manifesting out of nothing, it appears, or just lots and lots of money that Jeff Bezos is sitting on, but, you know, or not. I don't know where it's coming from. Whatever, however it's here, things are changing.
That's right. But the thing that is also changing is that the world around Amazon, like the outside of Amazon e-commerce ecosystem, has evolved and matured to where brands of all sizes can actually deliver on the Amazon level expectations that your customers have of you. So if you're a small and medium sized business, if you're a direct to consumer startup, if you're an independent retailer, or if you have a lifestyle e-commerce business, you can actually deliver at Amazon level. And we're going to teach you how to do that step by step in this season. We're on episode 2, and today we are sitting down to answer the question, can product returns build my brand? And I learned so much in this episode, Brian. I learned what reverse logistics means.
Like, I've only heard it like 200 times, but like, what is,
you know,
that?
You know that like Parks and Rec meme where it's like, you know, you keep saying reverse logistics, and I'm like, at this point, I'm too afraid to ask like what that means.
Exactly.
I actually had someone tell me what it meant in this episode, which is great. But you're going to learn how important returns are to ensuring customer loyalty and retention. But you're also going to learn that your brand can have packageless, printless returns. It's possible.
Yes, that's so cool.
It's so cool. Any brand can have this. It's kind of amazing.
I wish more brands had this, and that's why I'm so happy to see this episode come to life. And on this episode telling us this, we are about to listen to David Scobie, CEO and co-founder of Happy Returns, and Zach Goldstein, CEO and founder of Public Rec. With that, let's dive right into the content. Today, we have two guests with us, two incredible guests, David Scobie, CEO and co-founder of Happy Returns, and Zach Goldstein, CEO and founder of Public Rec. Welcome, David and Zach.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Super happy to have
Zach,
you.
Zach, I'm living in a post-COVID leisure wonderland with Public Rec has personally outfitted at least part of it. I'm a big fan of the brand. This is a huge get for me to get you on the show. So thanks for coming.
Oh, cool. Cool to hear. Yeah, I appreciate you having me. I'm excited to talk.
Yeah, whereas I only dress in formal wear. No, just kidding.
Brian has taken COVID black tie. It's very awkward. Yeah, he's redefining what formal wear is in the new era. In fact, there's like a lot of there's a lot of redefinition that's been happening. So I don't want to take anything for granted, because I think a lot of people are just catching up and catching on. They're becoming more aware of new brands every day. Zach, tell us a little bit about Public Rec, and David, then we'll get over to you.
Yeah. We're a leisure apparel brand. Started about 5 years ago. We started with the all day, everyday pant. It's a nicer fitting looking pair of sweatpants that come in a waist and an inseam size, so they fit better. I started the brand kind of to solve my own problem. Sweatpants never fit me well, either being too long at the bottoms, too narrow at the waist, always, you know, being baggy. And so, had the idea of how do we make a nicer fitting looking pair of sweatpants that you can feel good about wearing outside of the house. And that was really the start of the brand, and kind of how every garment has evolved since is really just updating your old sweats, whether it be sweatpants, sweatshirts, you know, old type of leisure wear, and using new performance fabrics and nicer designs and fits. And yeah, it's been going well ever since.
Congrats on the success. And David, I hate to be that guy, but if you don't like your Public Rec, Happy Returns helps send it back, right?
That's that's correct. Yeah.
Tell us about Happy Returns.
So as you probably have guessed from the name, if you're not familiar with the company, we tackle the painful challenge of returning products purchased online. So our mission statement is, and it's kind of a funny one, but we aim to make returns beautiful. And I always say, you know, similar to that old saying, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. You know, beauty means something different depending on who you are with regard to an e-commerce return. So if you're a shopper, a beautiful return is one that's friction-free. You know, there we enable box-free, contact-free drop-off at a network of about 2,600 locations around the country. If you're a merchant, if you're like Zach and Public Rec, a beautiful return is, well, it's one that doesn't happen first. So there we try to convert refunds into exchanges to help, you know, brands retain more revenue. But either return or exchange, the item has to get back. And so, you know, a beautiful return is one that's low cost. And then last, you know, we think about the planet. A beautiful return for the planet is one that doesn't involve cardboard, you know, that uses the least greenhouse gas possible. And so there's a whole sustainability side to what we do, which is largely driven not by shipping items in reusable totes rather than single-use cardboard.
Ooh, I love that. what a beautiful way to look at returns. I actually happen to hate online returns, so this is all super compelling to me.
This is the guy who had like 6 mattresses last year.
Yeah, it was awful. Ryan. It was the worst. It was awful.
No cardboard was harmed in the returning of 6 mattresses.
Brian. That's true. That's a good point. It wasn't. Well, today I'm so excited to have you both on because we're talking about how a brand can compete with Amazon here in this season 5 of Step by Step by Future Commerce. And so are we in the age of Amazon versus the rest of the world now? How do you as a brand think about Amazon today? And maybe how do you think your competitors and other modern D2C brands like Public Rec look at Amazon?
As far as a product standpoint, we spend, you know, years focused on just one product to make sure it's different and better than what's out there today, and feel like at least for now, that hasn't been where Amazon is focused. So from a competitive standpoint, at least today, we don't look at Amazon as competing with us in terms of the product offering. It's more so in the customer experience and the precedent that they've set for our customers. And, you know, if Amazon's offering 1 or 2 day shipping for free, you know, that's something that we have to be considering is, here's what Amazon ships in. Can we beat that, match that? How does that work for our business? And so that's at least how my perspective on how we think about Amazon as a competitor.
And it's possible right today, more than now than ever before. It's more possible today than ever before to actually compete on those consumer expectations, right, Zach? What would you say is one of the harder parts of competing with that expectation? Is it shipping speed? Is it fulfilling on the product quality expectation? Like, give me a little bit of an insight onto how you have come to terms with the fact that your customers have expectations of you that you didn't set with them.
Yeah, I think it's shipping speed for sure. You know, how quickly will I get my product? I think it's how easy is the checkout experience, and how easy Amazon has made that. And some of that is a little bit out of my control, our brand's control, at least for today. We use a lot of what Shopify has built for us, and Shopify's done a good job in their checkout experience. So we are a bit beholden to Shopify's checkout, which I think is good and getting better. And then we also look at the returns experience, of course, for sure. And you know, I know we'll get to it at some point, but just partnering with Happy Returns was something that has really upgraded our return service, and a partnership we've been super, super happy with.
Definitely agree that that's a huge part of the benefit of Amazon is that returns process. David, I'd love to have you weigh in here as well. Like, what role does Amazon play right now, and how should brands be thinking about Amazon as they bring their products to market?
Yeah, well, I think you know what Zach described in terms of Amazon setting sort of the service bar, I think is right. You know, the lens we view the world through is obviously returns and exchanges. And if you take a look at what Amazon has been doing over the last several years, it's really been driving shoppers to box-free in-person return drop-off. So, you know, I mean, just quick history lesson. We founded Happy Returns in the fall of 2015. We did the first box-free in-person return in April 2016. About 18 months after that, so sort of fall 2017, Amazon announced the partnership with Kohl's. And that was really an important moment for us in that it was Amazon kind of recognizing, hey, there's a better experience for shoppers that also, you know, is better for Amazon in terms of saving money to have shoppers bring items in person. Fast forward to today, you know, if you go do an Amazon return today, what you'd find is 4 or 5 box-free in-person options presented to you before any thought of printing a shipping label, right? They would say, return it to Kohl's or return it to Whole Foods, or and there might be an Amazon store near you, or return it to the UPS store, or even return it to an Amazon locker. All of that would be promoted first before any notion of print a label and send it back. So, you know, if you're a merchant competing today and Amazon is setting the service level, you know, box free in person is essentially what they're promoting as the free option. And, you know, anything back via the mail would be something they're promoting as a paid option. So it's been good for our business in the sense that, you know, this is exactly, you know, the service offering that we invented. This is what we enable. And I think it's becoming table stakes for e-commerce the same way free shipping outbound, you know, became table stakes, is this idea of a friction-free process for shoppers.
Ooh, and what's really interesting in having used the service myself in an exchange, not of public rec, no, definitely not, but having used Happy Returns myself, is there is this really amazing blend of self-service ability that allows me to actually like choose an exchange and to create, you know, an opportunity for myself to have another pathway to being fulfilled in, you know, in making myself happy with the product. And so I do think that there's this unsung hero of that customer expectation of returns is that not all returns actually end in a return. Many times it's just trying to, you know, course correct or make an exchange for a different product, you know, create another opportunity for them to be happy and satisfied. And I think that's so often overlooked in this conversation. I think that was a really brilliant point you made.
I'm glad you brought that up. You know, we try through software to recreate the experience of walking in a store. And what we think about is like, if you walked into a store to say, hey, I have a return to do, the store associate wouldn't respond by saying, great, here's your money back, right? The store associate would respond by saying probably something like, oh, I'm sorry, it didn't work out. You know, why didn't it work out? Because, you know, what stores are trained to do is to satisfy shoppers. And, you know, a return means something didn't work. And so maybe it's size related, maybe it's color related, right? But they would try to collect some information from you as the returning customer to try to make sure you walked out with something, right? But we think about that exact same process just via software. You know, when you come, the way our flow works is that the shoppers authenticate themselves. You know, typically this is using an order ID and a zip code. You know, they can select the items that they're returning. And then literally our software says, sorry, it didn't work out. Why are you returning it? And then based on the input that they get, based on their return reason, we'll try to propose something they would want. And in the, you know, categories where we spend a lot of time, which are things like apparel and footwear, there are a lot of size related returns. There are a lot of kind of color and style related returns. You know, so, hey, I love the shoes, but they were too small. Well, software should be able to tell you if the next available size is available, you know, is available. And so if you're returning the sevens because they're too small and the eights are available, well, make it easy. Right. And that's mm-hmm. really kind of what we're trying to do with regard to converting refunds into exchanges is just make it easy for shoppers, right? The same way if you walked into a store, the store associate would try to make it easy for you to walk out with something.
I love that term, make it easy, because I feel like that's everything that Amazon's ever tried to do with online purchasing, right? They've tried to make it easy for customers, make it convenient for customers, make it fit into their lifestyle. And so, you know, and I think kind of going back to what Zach was saying about, you know, what's important when you're going to market and you decide to sell apart from Amazon, or maybe, you know, addition to Amazon, and you build that own channel out, and having that experience that customers can rely on that feels comfortable, it feels easy, it feels like it's an experience that they want to engage in, and it's an experience that Amazon has sort of set for them, and that they kind of expect out of brands now. We're seeing.
I just want to interject there too. Yeah. You've said easy a few times. I love that because easy is not brainless.
Right.
Which is what I think a lot of folks feel like they have to index on, having this really slippery checkout and where it's just going to force you down into buying something as soon as humanly possible. But they've sort of misconstrued the benefit of having, you know, a quick checkout. It's got to be easy, but it doesn't have to be mindless. Yeah.
That's a really good point. So what I think I'm hearing is that it's not just about product. It's about experience, overall experience, right? And that experience is being made possible by a whole host of technologies and services like Happy Returns, like Shopify, like you know, some of the other platforms that are on this series, like Octane and Route, and so on. And so I think, you know, there's a tech stack that we're being able to create now. Yeah. That is
the modern commerce operating system, right? Like it's the operating system of e-commerce. So I'm curious.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to redirect to Zach too. Yeah, go for
exactly.
it.
No, I was going to say, Zach, you know, what's the stack that you've built, and you know, and tell us about like how these technologies have helped you sort of scale to this experience level that you know maybe you weren't able to reach before, or that your customers now expect. That's almost an unreasonable level of expectation that has just happened in the past few years.
Yeah. We're using Shopify for our site. So that's a lot of the back end for us. We're using Happy Returns for our, you know, reverse logistics. We're using Zendesk for our support. We also use Gorgeous for our support in a different capacity. So we have both of those offerings. Yeah, those are the main ones at Sitka. We use Narvar as well for customers once they purchase to track their package. Yep, those are the main ones.
And those are all so very – they're vital because they're customer facing, right? And that's when you think about the our prior series, Brian, the customer experience and being proactive – having the right technology integrations is key. I'm curious, Zach, too, you know, how you know, how integrated are those systems into every other piece of the customer experience? Like, do you have people living in multiple pieces of software that manage the CX part of the business for Public Rec every day?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have a few different people overseeing that. And like something that sticks out to me that I just think is interesting in the space is like all of this software has evolved so much over the last, you know, 3-5 years. When you think about some of the earlier direct-to-consumer brands that started like Bonobos, like I don't think a lot of this was available to them. And a lot of this has been born out of all of these brands starting, which I just think it's super interesting, and it is really improve the customer experience for brands to use these softwares and, you know, as we talked about earlier, try to compete with Amazon's experience.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Like it used to be that you had to own more parts of this process instead of partnering with third parties.
Yeah.
And now you're looking at, you know, at like there's a whole menu of options out there to pick from to partner with. In fact, there are very few brands at this point that want to own certain parts of this.
Right.
Like, is there anything left in the stack where you feel like it's something that you want to keep close to your vest, or, you know, are you looking to partner for basically the whole experience?
I think we're looking to partner for most of it. You know, I think it maybe starts to make more sense when you get to be a little bigger, when you're maybe 100 million plus and you start to, you know, build your site on different back end and different. Yeah. Which, you know, at least Public Rec is a little bit away from. But to me, I think more of it like, as you know, we worked with a lot of agencies in the beginning. We had a marketing agency, we had a web agency, and over time we brought a lot of that in-house as the business has grown, and we've been able to justify this is now a full-time role. So, you know, let's hire someone to just do this role that we maybe didn't have all this work for when we just started. So that's more of how I've thought about, you know, what do we own as a business versus what do we outsource and the software associated with it.
When we were building e-commerce back in 2007 and 2008, you know, we were literally building e-commerce. Like we built it, we hosted it. We didn't call it direct to consumer back then because we weren't fancy, but it was just e-commerce. And yeah, I mean, if you wanted a support system, there was, you know, one out there that you know was a desktop application for Windows. So we had to build one. And I just think about how much time I had spent in those early years in the career in being an IT professional and not necessarily a retailer. And I think that it provides so much bandwidth for you, Zach, and a business like yours to really focus on what your core competency is, and that's making meaningful products that people fall in love with and not necessarily being a technologist. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the most important part, is making a product that's differentiated and better than what's out there. And, you know, hopefully we do the rest of the stuff well and we communicate the message that we've done this, and then people get the product and it resonates. But, yeah, to me, that is our core competency is, you know, trying to make the best product possible.
Hey, everybody, Philip breaking in here just to tell you a little bit about this episode's sponsor. I'm talking about Route. If you haven't heard about Route, I think it's going to change the way that you deliver packages and experiences to your customers. Let me break it down for you. Route is the premier post-purchase experience platform for you, an online retailer. What does that mean? Well, from the second that a customer checks out on your store to the moment that they receive the package that they bought from you, that process can be wrought with all kinds of problems. Missing packages, broken items, slow deliveries, and let's face it, carriers don't communicate the way that we all wish that they would. There's a list of pitfalls for customer experience that is virtually endless. And Route provides solutions that give retailers control over that whole delivery experience. customers will be able to actually use a tool to see where their package is in transit. You'll get order protection that gives your customers confidence and saves you money on your bottom line to keep from having to reship products that just didn't arrive or are lost in transit. You'll have customer service automation that allows you to save both time and money by being proactive in the way that you manage the experience of the post-purchase process. And finally, you're going to have engagement tools that allow you to connect and convert your customers over and over again. Route is only 2 years old, but they're already trusted by over 8,000 retailers all over the world. And the best part, it's completely free. F-R-E-E, free as in beer. Is it too good to be true? Kind of. Well, Route is giving away $100 gift cards to merchants that are listening to this podcast episode right now if you just book a demo. That's all you got to do. So go ahead. What are you waiting for? Go over to go.route.com/futurecommerce and tell them Philip sent you. Get that $100 gift card. That's go.route.com/futurecommerce and get your demo today. What are you waiting for? You're going to take your customer experience post-purchase process to the next level. That's go.route.com/futurecommerce and get that $100. Put it in your pocket and tell them that you heard about it on Step by Step Season 5. Let's get back into the show.
That makes a lot of sense to me as well. And it's, and again, I think that, you know, and David, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. This isn't actually pit us up against Amazon in many ways. Like this allows us to sort of give customers options they feel comfortable with. Do you feel like, David, do you feel like we're, you know, up against Amazon on this, or, you know, talk to me a little bit about sort of the strategy that, you know, that you think about when, you know, when you're talking about direct consumer brands and how they, you know, can leverage Amazon or not leverage Amazon and the benefits of kind of driving things through their own channel.
Yeah. I mean, as you guys were talking, I was thinking about my own experience in e-commerce, and I'm going to date myself a bit here, but, you know, I worked for eBay kind of 2003 to 2007. And then I ended up moving to LA and working at Hotlook. And then I worked at Revolve, and, you know, in every one of those instances, you know, we built everything, right? It was sort of, you know, in an era where, you know, not only did you sell stuff, but you actually built your website and you maintained your website and you built a warehouse and you maintained that. And, you know, I compare that to today where, you know, Shopify can help on the website and 3PLs can help with logistics and companies like Happy Returns can help with returns. I think it's just sort of fundamentally different era. And I think to your point kind of allows you to be focused on what creates that emotional connection with your customer. It's not the speed of fulfillment necessarily. It's what's in the box, right? You know, to kind of speak to your point though, you know, I do think everyone is competing with Amazon in terms of just the mind share around, you know, what do I expect? And what do I expect a great e-commerce experience to be? And I think it's an unforgiving atmosphere. And what I mean by that is that, you know, like it or not, like we all like getting things quickly, right? We all like friction-free returns. We all like, you know, the reliability that Amazon has sort of conditioned us to expect when we're buying things online. And so I don't think that, you know, a brand like Public Rec is necessarily pitted against Amazon from a product perspective, but I think it's the expectation that people have of shopping online, which is like, why can't everything just be easy the way it is with Amazon, right? Why can't it all be fast? Why can't, you know, it be friction free? And so from that standpoint, I think we all live in Jeff Bezos's world, unfortunately, you know, fortunately or unfortunately. And I don't think you can deny that, you know, they're the ones that are setting the pace with regard to what we all expect. It's hard when I think about like my kids, they don't have patience for things that take a long time to ship, you know, anymore. They're kind of like, why is it not here already? just as one example. And I think that's a function of just how much, you know, Amazon has become integrated into our day-to-day lives. Is they expect everything. They expect to be able to buy everything online. They expect it to show up quickly and, you know, now expect it to be, you know, easy to return it.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's a feedback loop in the way that returns happen back to a, you know, to a brand such as Public Rec, where in another marketplace, because you're not necessarily owning the relationship with the customer, it might be more difficult to feed that sort of information on the return reasons and back to the product innovation side of the business. I'm curious what your experience is, Zach, in sort of the value of customer return and exchange and how it guides your product decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, it plays a big role, I think, in our product development and improving products. We started partnering with Nordstrom earlier in the year, and we've been selling through them. And candidly, we don't have much visibility into what their returns look like or how customers are receiving the product. And so really the only way we know about the performance of our products or, you know, what customers think is returns, exchanges, feedback that they leave us, reviews that they leave on the site. And all of that comes from customers purchasing on the website. Like, even if a customer is purchasing through Nordstrom and whether they like or dislike the product, we don't hear any feedback in terms of any sort of review or, I think being able to sell directly to the consumer and, get the feedback right away on this fit well, this didn't, you know, this thread came undone, and then we see, oh, maybe this thread came undone in the same place multiple times. Let's talk to the factory about why this is happening. All of that has helped us kind of improve the garments and also informed us on what our customers want to see next. When we hear feedback of, I like this pair of pants, but if it was, you know, a jogger or feedback like that, it helps inform how we think about building out our product offering. So all of it is super helpful to own the relationship with the customer.
That's really cool. Yeah. I was just thinking about reviews and the role that they play in this whole process. And back to something that you were saying, David, as well, that it's really interesting to me that there's so many reviews out there that you can go read. And I think this plays into the whole process of improving that experience, but there's so many reviews that are low stars just due to shipping time and like, or return policies or things that don't have to do with the product. And so I think it's really interesting how a bad purchasing experience can impact like purchasing and view of a company in the future as well. Thinking about what you just said, Zach, have you experienced any of that kind of feedback that has driven you to improve your whole buying experience?
Yeah, you mean like the return experience or just, you know?
Yeah, in general, return experience and or other places.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for what we get, you know, reviews on the experience with Happy Returns constantly about, you know, people being satisfied with the experience and really enjoying it and how convenient it was. And, so that's been super encouraging as we've partnered with them to hear the feedback from our customers of how they enjoy the experience. And I think it just frees them up to want to come back to us and to feel good about, you know, I'll give this product a try. If I don't end up loving it, I know that the returns process is smooth and something I'm comfortable with and enjoy. So, you know, I'm more willing to try more products with Public Rec. And I mean, we're looking at that in multiple ways and we're like shipping transit times and should we be using a different carrier? And we're constantly kind of trying to see how we can improve the customer experience while also weighing the cost benefit analysis to us in terms of, you know, can we still be profitable in whatever, you know, we think is the right move for the business.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about how damaging a bad experience can be. And then obviously things have gone so well for you guys with Happy Returns and some of the other technologies you picked. But I would imagine that customers are, you know, constantly thinking, well, you know, if things go poorly with this experience, I'm just going to go use Amazon. they're running like cost benefit analysis, maybe not like consciously, but subconsciously like against Amazon all the time. Like, was it worth it for me to go buy this from Amazon off Amazon, or should I have just stuck with using Amazon to do this, to make this purchase? I would imagine like we're seeing psychological changes right now with consumers that everything is being weighed against the experience that they have with Amazon purchases, which is why 50% of US purchasing online is with Amazon. The experience, once that is out of the way, like when they don't have to think about it, to me, that's when things run the smoothest. Have you seen, as you've added technologies and services like Happy Returns Act, have you seen conversion improve? Have you seen like bumps in traffic converting from maybe one channel to another?
That's a good question. I don't want to, speak out of turn. I don't know what our conversion rate looked like pre and post Happy Returns. I will say that we have gotten customer feedback that, people have enjoyed the switch, and it's significantly decreased our costs. I guess I just can't comment on what our conversion rate looked like pre and post. I imagine that, as customers have been through the experience, they've been more willing to come back and more willing to buy more and try more things. But yeah, I would have to look through the data a bit more.
Yeah. I mean, we've tried to look at what impact does returns have on long-term lifetime value ultimately is what you would want to see. And what we found is that there's so many factors that go into that equation. It's really hard to tease out the impact of returns and specifically Happy Returns. But what we do know is a couple things. What we do know is that the pain or the perceived pain of returns has a huge impact on whether someone's willing to shop online in general. We know that the return policy is something that most, if not all, shoppers look at before they check out. So it has a huge impact on conversion rate. And to a point that one of you made earlier, it has a huge impact on customer retention. And when I'm talking to brands, I often talk about sort of the cost of getting it right and the cost of getting it wrong. And there's a lot of data that supports this, but if you get it wrong, meaning if a customer buys something from you and then has a bad experience returning, they're really unlikely to come back and shop again. I can speak to my own experience here. There have been times where I bought something and then I go to return it and I didn't realize that it was going to be a pain in the butt, or there was a fee that I didn't expect, or my gosh, I sent it in and then I had to call multiple times to get my refund. Those tend to be retention killers, right? People won't come back and shop with you again. And in an environment where customer acquisition cost is rising and it's so expensive to get someone's attention, let alone get them to buy from you, it's really hard to have your return process be the thing which ends the relationship. The flip side of that, kind of the getting it right part, I'm glad to hear, Zach and his customers have had a great experience with us. We think that's kind of the magic moment, which is if you can take my disappointment as a shopper, right? Something didn't work and now I have to return it. And you can turn it into a delightful experience. Then I'm so much more likely to shop with you in the future because I know that, hey, if it doesn't work out, it's not going to suck, right? and let's be honest, returning via the mail just sucks, right? I mean, no one wants to deal with printing labels and no one wants to deal with boxes and no one wants to deal with the hassle and the weight of, checking your credit card statement to make sure the refund came. It's really... That becomes an opportunity to create loyalty with shoppers, where they're more likely to say, "Hey, this thing didn't work out." I think customers are willing to give e-commerce merchants the benefit of the doubt, which is like, "Hey, I wasn't able to try it on, or I wasn't able to, or maybe I bought multiple sizes and I'm returning the ones that didn't work." So there's a fair amount of I think understanding that returns are part of shopping online. Where I think there's no tolerance is, if this is a bad return experience, I'm not going to shop with you again. If it's a good experience, then I'm more likely to shop with you because I know it's not going to be terrible if it doesn't work out. And I think it's, if there's one kind of counterintuitive challenge that we've had in building our business, it's this idea that, making returns easy is good in the long run, right? Because I've had plenty of conversations with merchants that are like, wait a minute, why would I want to make returns easy? Isn't that going to increase my return rate? Isn't that going to, be more costly for me? And the answer is no, it's not. You know, what it's going to do is it's going to improve the retention of these customers because, you know, returns, nobody makes the decision, am I going to return this because of how easy it is? People make a decision, am I going to return it based on their love for the product, right? Or the fit of the product, or, you know, and it's sort of like two separate decisions. You know, one is, do I want to keep it or not? And then the other is, how mad am I going to get if this process is tough? And how, you know, how much of that am I going to project onto the, you know, the brand and, you know, that I bought from. So I think it has a huge impact upstream. And I think it has a massive impact on retention. And I think it's, you know, I think it's important. I think unfortunately returns is one of those things that's easy to think about. Oh, well, this happens after the purchase and this happens downstream. And so I only need to think about the people who the purchase didn't work out for. The reality is it has a massive impact upstream in terms of who shops your site, in terms of whether they check out. And so I think it has to be, you know, given its due in the customer journey, which is, you know, this is as important as, you know, your return policy and the expectations that people have when they read it are just as important as, you know, speed of delivery and quality of the product and, you know, how you merchandise it. And, you know, it's just part and parcel of the customer experience.
That's such an interesting point, because I think to myself, an adage from being back on the brand side so many years ago was, you know, the most expensive mistake that we make is the one that prevents a customer from coming back to us. And that's, when you think about it in terms of engendering trust and creating, you know, dare I say, you know, a lifelong relationship with the customer. CLTV is my favorite metric, by the way, because most people track lifetime value on a 3-month horizon and not over the lifetime of anything. But I digress on that. But the interesting impacts of these multiply by zero effects of, like, you could do everything right, but if you do returns wrong, it nullifies all the other work that you've done. You can have a stellar product. If someone is stuck with it, then the likelihood of them returning is much lower. And totally. This is where I cough and go Lululemon. And that's all. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've got some stuff in my closet that, you know, I didn't return it because it was a pain in the butt to do it. Or there was one in particular I'm thinking of where I didn't realize there was a charge. And so I was like, well, I'll just keep it, right? Rather than, you know, paying you for the rights. But I look at it, you know, I look at it every day, right? It's like every day I'm reminded that I'm not shopping at that merchant.
it's like a totem of a mistake that that they made. I'd love to get some sort of, as we are closing up on our time, I'd love to get some, you know, sage advice from two brilliant operators. We rarely get to sit with folks like yourself. Zach, I'm curious, you know, how if you were building the business today instead of 5 years ago, what are some things that you think were multipliers that would help you to achieve, you know, success faster? Or scale faster, or, you know, avoid some pitfalls along the way that you could give to those that are listening now?
Good question. At least for me, in my experience, I kind of wish I had hired a bit sooner, and I think we would have moved a bit faster. The one other thing I'll say is just starting a company and my expectations coming into it and having a background in finance, I kind of always felt like, you know, I'd be pretty good at understanding the costs and how long things would take. And so, I'd constantly hear things are going to cost more. They're going to take longer than you expect. And I'd be like, okay, I'll put in a budget for however long I think it's going to take or cost and add something to that just to, you know, protect my downside. And things always ended up, you know, costing more and taking longer than whatever I could predict. So I guess that's just, you know, I don't know how you manage against that other than to be okay with that expectation and maybe, you know, have the resources that, to afford yourself to have some room there when things end up taking longer or costing more.
Well, thanks for that, Zach. How about you, David? I'm curious. What's some sage advice that you can give a business operator that might be looking to make their business scale and maybe how returns plays into that?
Well, I was thinking about Zach's comment about kind of hiring, and I think, especially in a startup, there's so much emphasis placed on speed and, you know, trying to do things quickly. And the one area where I don't think that applies at all is really in hiring. And I would say, you know, I mean, and this sounds like just, you know, I feel like, you know, plenty of other people have made this point, but it's really true. You know, it's the sort of like hire slow, fire fast kind of thing, you know, like take your time. You know, and the challenge with the startup is that by the time you get around to writing the job rec and posting the job rec, and, you know, like you never hire in advance in a startup, you're always hiring like when something's broken, right? It's like, you know, we did this, you know, and we tried to do this ourselves for such a long time. And now it has just gotten to the point where it is totally broken and we're willing to spend the money to hire someone to do this full time. So at that point, you know, you're really impatient to fill the role. Right. And, you know, we've had times where I'm like, and I think I may have even said this in hiring discussions, you know, it's like, does the person have a pulse? Do they want to join? Okay, great. You know, like we just need this, we need someone to solve this problem. You know, obviously the challenge with that is that, you know, if you hire the wrong people, it's not just, you know, it's not just, can they do the job? It's sort of like the impact on the organization of hiring the wrong person and the pain of like letting folks go and the pain of, okay, something didn't work. It's just not worth it. You know, you're better off to take your time and to find the right people and to, you know, find people that are, you know, not just right for sort of the moment, but people that can grow with you. And that's a harder thing to tease out in interviews. You know, we've found employing exercises, for example, you know, along the way is really helpful, especially, you know, in things like marketing or even engineering, you know, things like a coding test or a marketing exercise, to really get a sense of the person's skills. And, you know, it's like, it's in everyone's interest for you to go slow and to make the most informed decision you possibly can. Cause even when you do that, sometimes, you know, you get it wrong. Right. But it's, but I just say like, despite the kind of preconditioning that you have to move fast and the expectations of your investors to move fast and, you know, just sort of like startup culture, oh, let's move quickly and break things. Like you definitely don't want to take that approach to hiring. You want to move slowly and deliberately and thoughtfully because, you know, those decisions last and they shape the culture.
I just think about the topic of this miniseries and how to compete with Amazon. And I think about how Amazon hired and the process they went through to bring, or that they go through to bring people on. It's quite thorough and it's a long process. And I think it's, you know, if we consider people one of our most important differentiators as businesses, I think that both of you have said something incredibly important, which is don't be afraid to hire people and make sure you hire the right ones. And I think that's a great way to wrap up a show about how to compete with Amazon in 2021. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this episode of season 5 of Step by Step. And it was brought to you by the fine folks at Route and all of their partners who actually made this possible. And just remember, Route is the premier post-purchase experience platform. And that means that anything that you need from the click of the checkout button all the way to the package arriving safely inside the home, Route can have you covered. That's live package tracking updates. That's order protection. That covers things from missing packages and broken items and poor carrier communication and customer service automation. All of those things save you time and money, but it puts money back into your pockets because customers are going to come back and purchase again. You should check out Route. I'm a big fan and 8,000 other retailers all over the world are too. It's completely free for you. And even better, it could put money in your pocket today if you take a $100 gift card when you sit down and take a demo. And that's all you got to do. You can go get that demo. Go get it right now at go.route.com/futurecommerce. Go get the demo today at go.route.com/futurecommerce. Other episodes can be found at futurecommerce.fm. Drop us a line and email us. Tell us what you think at hello@futurecommerce.fm. And subscribe to our Insiders and the Census newsletter that come out every Tuesday and every Friday. You can get that at futurecommerce.fm/subscribe. Thank you so much for listening. to step-by-step.